You're listening to Panel Borders, which is the extended podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Alex Fitch, and in this episode, in an interview recorded in the old police station Deptford, I'm talking to Sarah McIntyre and Vivian Schwartz, who illustrate books for children, such as Morris the Mancius Monster and Shark and Lobster's Amazing Undersea Adventure, respectively. Sarah and Vivian share a studio with Beano artist Gary Northfield that they affectionately call the Flea Station. First, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner, FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, radio, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I'm talking to Sarah McIntyre and Vivian Schwartz at the Flea Station on the New Cross Deptford border. You guys share this studio with Gary Northfield called the Flea Station because the three of you have done work that involves sheep, but presumably the three of you joining together was a more complicated story than the fact that you all did children's books with sheep in them.
I haven't even done my sheep book yet.
Oh.
I do that now, but I was planning it.
So. Yeah, we kind of all met because Gary and I met through the DFC, and he was drawing as Derek the sheep, and I was doing Vernon Lettuce, and then I met Vivian at your lunch. Yes. Alex Milway invited me to the lunch of there are cats in this book.
Yeah, and I think we were kind of like looking for something to talk about.
Mm.
And I was asking you what you did, and you said when Lettuce won, I was like, oh, I like the sheep. I'm doing a comic about sheep. And he said, oh, you must meet Gary down the street. He's a really nice guy, and he also draws sheep.
That's right.
So we can, yes, and we're like, oh, we got to have a picnic. And yes, and we have.
Yeah, because Vivian has this amazing picnic camper that's like, it came in a Rolls Royce, and it's like one of those old-fashioned car picnic campers. And it's actually really, really hard to carry because we carried it to Peckham Rye Park. And it's meant to go in a car. Gary carried it, and he's dying.
Like, oh, he's all right, okay.
But he's trying to look really, like
strong. Oh, okay.
We had an amazing picnic there.
Yes.
So, in fact, you did meet because of your communal love of cartoon sheep.
Yeah, I suppose.
Because the jam picture that the three of you use to represent your sort of combined work at the Flea Station is a picture of Vern.
That's right.
A picture of Gary the sheep and a picture... Derek.
<They're the same. laughs>
A picture of Gary the Sheep by Derek Northfield and a special blue-faced ram that you drew for the occasion.
Yeah, the black and white sheep. He's just called the black and white sheep.
And he's eating yogurts because we can actually see the police name outside our window. Yes. And they're always sitting there in the police station eating yogurts.
Yes, because, your sheep get drunk. Yeah, mine just looks disapproving and eats some yogurts. That's about right.
So, were you and Gary looking for a studio at that time and you thought it'd be nice to share it with someone else? Or
actually, it was Twitter, wasn't it? All three of us were on Twitter.
Yeah, you were saying on Twitter, wah! Mostly for a while, and then,
how do you spell that?
And Gary was saying,
wah! And I was kind of like, what's your problem? And you're like, oh, I don't want to work at home anymore. I need a different job. Maybe fixing cars, I don't know.
No, I didn't say that.
And it's like, I can't do this. I'm at home.
Everyone was just complaining about how much we hated working by ourselves. We kind of organically came up with the idea.
How about a studio?
Yeah.
So, yes?
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Oh, okay. Let's all meet up and look at a studio then.
Yeah, we started planning it over Twitter even. It was bizarre.
Yeah. And then somebody sends a message, you know, saying... Yeah, then we started, like, other people were, like, following us and saying, oh, I know a studio here, I know a studio there.
Mm.
And then one of them was...
Yeah, it was the guy who did the Save the DSC campaign. He was Barnaby Gunning. He really loved the DSC, and he's an architect, and he had an architect friend who just transformed this old police station into studios. So he said, we love your comics. Why don't you try out this place? And we did, and so we're very grateful to Barnaby. Thank you, Barnaby.
Yes, and it's weird, yeah. It's like, this sounds good, straight away.
And it's strange, it's so atmospheric. When we first got here, it was we didn't see anyone, and there was just the cells and like it was very kind of...
Yeah, and it was like this room was like totally full of all the furniture. It was like, oh, the policemen have just left and kind of left some stuff behind, but not very much. I wonder if they took all the furniture. No, they put it all in here. And then we're like, oh, here's the furniture.
Yes, we didn't actually see the studio when we took it. It was just full of furniture.
We couldn't even go in.
Couldn't even move from the
and
door.
We could just about tell that there was like squishy-looking wallpaper, kind of, which
That's
was
horrible.
Like looked like diseased lung somehow, that colour. And we're like, oh, but it will be lovely. And now it is.
Yeah. We spent 2 days painting it, and yeah, we're bringing in a photocopy machine soon, so we can make lots of mini comics, and we've got big plans.
Awesome. Well, because it's interesting, it's a geographical space and also a conceptual space, because you've turned it into a blog where people can see the three of you produce work. And also, as a studio, it's something that's been open to the public, both on days when you had sort of the opening party and also as part of Deptford X.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, Deptford X was great. We had loads of visitors and people just really curious what we were up to. I think they thought we were doing fine art, and then they'd walk in and there was pictures of cats and monsters, and they were like, whoa. But then they really liked it.
It's really nice that it's not just, I mean, that there's so many different sorts of things going on in the whole studio complex. But there's fine artists and animators and musicians, no?
Yeah, I think so. The guys and upstairs make films, and one of them's even won a BAFTA, Ian Goldstone.
And policemen.
Yeah, and policemen. Yeah,
because they come around.
A lot of them are planes clothes. They hang out in our cafe, because we've got this amazing cafe downstairs, the Metropolitan Tea Rooms. And the lady who started it the day we moved in.
Yes, we didn't expect a cafe. We always just thought, oh, we can sit down in that nice room sometimes. And, oh my God, look at all the food.
I ran down to make myself a cup of tea, and there was this kitchen full of food, and I was like, Gary, you've got to come up, there's a cafe. It's amazing.
And then you phone up and say, yeah, that's a cafe. That's
we've just been eating cake, we're getting really fat here. We're going to start looking like our sheep.
Yes.
But it's interesting that because the three of you are sharing a studio, it's something that you're sharing with the outside world simultaneously, as not only the evolution of your own work, but the way that you guys are kind of jamming together on projects. Mm. And there are other artists, obviously thousands and thousands of artists out there who share studios, even within the comic world. But it's not as if Woodrow Phoenix and Ilya do a blog called The Bus Station, you know. So I think it's really interesting the way that you've turned this both into a personal and a public project.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't made very many things together yet, but
there's a lot of back and forth. Like Gary got stuck a while back on the Beano, and so we were bouncing ideas off, and he ended up giving us little credits at the bottom of Derek the Sheep.
Well, actually, I was going to ask about that. Was that just in terms of inspiration? It wasn't that Gary drew it, you inked it, and you coloured it.
No.
Just ideas. It was just Gary going, I don't know
what should I do?
Yeah.
And you were laughing your head off about one of the things.
The first page was so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. And then we just talked about how it should go on.
Yeah, Viv was sitting up on the roof, like among the tomatoes, and reading it and just wetting herself laughing. It was so funny.
Yeah, I was really impressed, because normally, you know, I've never laughed about the Beano before.
Yeah, and I think Gary was a bit worried about that it wasn't working, and then she laughed so hard, he was like, yeah, that's actually working. Good. And then we've had... because I was drawing a dinosaur for my book, and I was having a really hard time drawing it. I couldn't get it right. And I was like, Gary, help. And I passed him a post-it note, and he just did it in like 2 seconds, and it was a perfect dinosaur. And so I basically used that shape for my book that I'm doing now, a picture book. And so I'm going to have to call it Derek the Dinosaur. It looks like a Derek the Sheep, though it's a dinosaur. That'll be quite funny when it comes out.
Yeah, it's the whole kind of atmosphere is good too. Yeah.
Yeah, you taught me so much about like book design and just layouts. And
Viv,
Viv has like this really cool thing where she makes a sketchbook and like uses all different kinds of paper in it, and it makes really interesting. Like you just go through and it's like this little treasure trove.
It's interesting for me to have people around who actually do a lot of drawing, because I don't.
You do too.
I do a bit, but not like that. It's like it's just part of the thing. I spend a lot of time just thinking.
Yeah, Viv thinks a lot. Like, I never think. I just draw, and she thinks and thinks.
And then sometimes I start drawing and do it quite quickly and then start thinking again. And it's, I think I'd probably think too much.
You drive me crazy the way you do your dummy book. She'll do a whole dummy book, like roughs, and she'll do it with a Sharpie pen onto the dummy book, and she'll finish it in a day, like the whole book. Or no, not even a day, like 2 hours. And it's like, how do you... She doesn't even use a pencil. She just... draws with a Sharpie, and then there's a whole book laid out in 2 hours. And it's really good. I get so annoyed.
Yeah, but you make whole comics. like quite quickly, which I want to learn. And you can tell what everything is, which is great. Yeah.
It's interesting that both of you kind of work in the space between comics and children's books. You've done straight children's books and you've done comics. Well, Viv, your work actually always seems to be a combination of the two. In terms of that kind of crossover between the two media, do you think there's something that there needs to be a lot more of?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think Viv really pioneered comics in picture books with her Shark and Lobster and Undersea Adventure book. Yeah. It's amazing because it's a picture book, but it has all the comic elements. And I think it was in the early days when Walker was kind of not quite sure about comics, and she did it, and I think maybe they really woke up to the idea that comics are really good for kids and that you can use them in all sorts of ways. It's not just a kind of a superhero thing, or I don't know. I thought it was quite innovative, really.
Oh, good. I wasn't quite aware. Like people said, it was like, oh wow, look at this comic and the picture book, and I thought that was quite normal.
It had really like the panels and speech balloons. I mean, the whole thing's a comic, but it wasn't marketed as a comic, and I think that may be a big way forward actually for people in comics doing quite simple layouts and for picture books, but having comics kind of sneaking in.
Yeah, nobody complained about it being a comic. I mean, no one who was aware of, and that was good because they always kind of worry that that makes the books look cheap and stupid. And nobody said. There was more feedback along the lines of, wow, this is an introduction for small children to the interesting medium of comics. I was like, oh, is it?
But also, well, you didn't use just flat Photoshop colors, you used really rich palettes and kind of deep, you know, it had a really lovely overall look that was very much part of picture books. It wasn't you know, that kind of flat look you sometimes do get with comics. So
it's nice to have like the resource and the time to be allowed to spend that much time on 12 spreads. That's not really what you...
Well, that was actually a question that I asked Raymond Briggs, both when he gave a talk at the ICA and when I interviewed him over the phone, that he kind of moaned in a way that he was stuck within the limitations of picture books for years, that they had to be a certain size, they had to be a certain number of pages. But at the same time, I think he was very lucky because the comics that he was doing in the early 80s were given the lavish production values of a picture book. And so they were much nicer things to actually hold in your hand and read in terms of the reproduction than comics of the time.
Yeah, I mean, they just put more money into picture books and they pay better for them. And, I think when they start valuing comics a bit more, they'll pay more of what, because it takes so much time to make a comic, because there often is so many more pictures per page. But the other way to look at that is you can actually scale down the number of pictures per page and keep it a comic, but have the full production value, you know, nice layouts, nice paper, nice ink. And
It's a nice challenge, actually, to have 12 spreads or however many you get.
The story has to be really perfect, like every page has to be well chosen.
But it's like some people enjoy having the challenge of a given format and some don't.
Because at the moment you've just brought out a new picture book, Morris the Mankiest Monster, but you've been selling it at comic conventions. So because you already have a reputation for comic books such as Vernon Letters, have you been finding a new audience for both, that kids who wouldn't normally buy your comics have found about your comics, and people who wouldn't normally buy picture books but discovered you through your comics have been buying the picture books?
Yeah, I don't think people have had a problem with it. I mean, in some ways it is a comic, but it's just every single page is one panel.
Yeah.
You could say that. But also I think when people came to... There's not a lot in Britain for children in comics, younger children in comics, and a lot of times it's nostalgia of their dads bringing them and hoping they'll like the same stuff they like, but... But they're often too young. They just don't get their heads around like Marvel and DC. And I think Toon Books in New York is starting to put out some really good younger children comics. But you know, when kids came to the British International Comic Show, they said it was child friendly, and it was in a way because there was lots of stormtroopers walking around and stuff. But the kids actually can't really see above the tables, and they're not supposed to touch the things and take them out of their sleeves. And so, you know, it's really nice when you can have a table where they can actually look at the books and make things, and it's you know, something they can understand. And it was a little bit of a child oasis, I think, I was trying to create at the comics fair. And a lot of middle-aged men sat and made coloured monsters with me as well.
Awesome.
And Japanese students, and we had everyone.
Aww. Just saying aww.
Are you ever going to do a blog or a website of all of the monsters that people have created so far?
I might do, but actually there's already over like 200.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've had a lot of workshops, so it'll be a lot of scanning if I do that.
But animate them.
Yeah, maybe.
Quite nice.
Morph between.
Yeah, I might try to do something.
I mean, this was something that we discussed yesterday at the conference, the fact that people seem to be confused about labels for things, that when Woodrow Phoenix was doing Rumblestrip, he found it very difficult to market it. And when
Dominique Goblet,
she's just brought out an art book that's 10 years of drawings of her by her daughter and her daughter by her. Oh, and she's calling it a comic. And actually, I think that's stretching the definition too far, personally.
It's narrative, but yeah, I mean, it's a sequence and tells a story in its own way. But yeah, it doesn't have speech bubbles or traditional format things. But I like it when people push the boundaries of comics and they sort of, you know, they make it 3D or they do something completely unusual. I don't like it when you always have to stick to inking stories and panels and then putting in colour. It's really nice when people experiment a bit.
I don't know, it's kind of interesting to me because I've never been really involved in any discussions of like what is which format and what to call what, and I just kind of like I'm thinking about my own work most of the time. Then I just don't quite think about it like, oh, I really want to make a comic, or I really want to make a picture book, or it just kind of, I just want to make it in the format that seems most suited to the story. And it's quite surprising to, not surprising, but it's interesting to see people getting very passionate about these things and kind of saying, we need more comics, or we need more picture books, or we need more anything.
The question I suppose that I'm travelling towards, and I probably ought to actually articulate, is the fact that there are loads of brilliant picture books for kids that are also comics, and they're bought by parents and schools for kids, but there's a huge comic book buying audience out there as well, and perhaps they should be buying more picture books, but they're not buying them because they're in the kids' book section, and kids aren't buying comics because they're in the comic book section, you know, so there should be more crossover between the two.
Absolutely. I think a lot of men just never, or I mean, I'm generalizing, but often men, they never go, they don't like to go into the children's book section because they think it's really mumsy. Like, if they have the children's books at Gosh, they might look at them because that's acceptable, but they won't actually go into a place that has Angelina Ballerina. What's that one? All that pink and fairies, and they don't want to go in there. And then they're missing all this amazing stuff just because of the marketing. And, you know, there's people like Posy Simmons who they do know, but she makes picture books like Lavender and these other ones, and they're I think they would really like them, but say that one's packaged with like a kind of pink cover, and I think a guy might not pick that up and think, this is, you know, I'm going to get Watchmen and Lavender.
And yeah, that would be nice. I definitely recommend that they go and have a look at it and kind of feel clever and maybe postmodern about it.
I think they get a lot of ideas from making their own comics because there's just so much more innovation sometimes in picture books with like paper engineering and just different layouts and not always relying on black line. Lots of different.
Well, yeah, I mean, you introduced me to the work of
Coleman Polhouse.
Yes.
Yeah, Crocodile Blues. Yeah, that's beautiful. That was published by Templar, and it's kind of almost like New Yorker style, and it's a very limited palette, like blue, black, yellow, and white. And silhouettes, and it's in some ways, kids would like it, but it's not obviously kid-friendly. But again, that would be sold in the picture book section, and a lot of people would miss it.
And it's the kind of innovation that's missing from comics.
Yeah, because the pages, they open, they're amazing. They open like four stories up the page, you know, there's a hotel, and you see it one, and then you just keep opening up. And if you don't fold all the panels back, the book is about six times larger by the time you finish reading it.
Oh, wow.
It's really cool.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
Mike Jolly, he was the art director, and they had so much fun playing with that. The guy had, but I think the guy had a real vision for it that I think comics people would admire.
If each of you could talk about how you kind of got into comics and picture books, was it a love of one or the other or a bit of both?
I went off comics still for a long time. I loved them when I was a kid, reading the Seattle Times with my family and Calvin and Hobbes and all these people. But I sort of thought they were, when I went into comic book shops, they just, all these browns and greens and superheroes, and it just didn't strike me at all. You know, I didn't like it. And then when I was at Camberwell College studying illustration, I met Ellen Lindner, who makes comics. And just she really showed me, along with like LiveJournal, showed me the things that are going on out there that are completely different, you know, autobiographical comics, history comics, really amazing things. And And through that, I started to warm up to it and experiment a bit. And then I met Paul Gravett almost kind of randomly and at a Yahoo group meeting. And I never join Yahoo groups. And it was some guy who just knew a lot about comics. And he said, oh, I know this guy named David Fickling. Why don't you submit some stuff to him? Because he's looking for somebody who does picture books and comics and would be interested in doing a children's comic. So I got in touch with Paul and David Fickling, like the same night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, he emailed back saying, oh, yeah, we'd definitely be interested. And that was really my first comic, proper comic. I'd made some travel comics and things, but it was interesting because it really wasn't that hard to go from picture books to comics. The design elements were almost exactly the same, you know, just a bit of fiddling around with speech bubbles and things, but not that difficult. And I was kind of a little scared because I'd never done a proper comic, and David said, can you do it? And I was like, I didn't exactly lie, but I was like, I didn't know if I could do it. But I just said, yeah, of course I can. And so he gave me a page a week, and that was such good training ground. And you can actually see in the first few comics, like the characters haven't quite found their shapes, but then they start to find their way. So, cool.
And Viv?
I did. Well, actually, when I was little, I loved all books. Like, really, even like the manuals that come with like Hoovers and washing machines, just anything that you could like read. I quite quickly didn't like picture books that much because they're so short. And I had to like always get them from the library, and they were very heavy, and then I had to, you know, they only lasted a day, well, less. And so I really like comics because they you could read them longer. They just, you know, had more pictures. So they were like concentrated picture books to me. So I really got into that quite quickly.
Any titles in particular?
They were like, the first thing I liked was this, I think it's a German one called Patsy or something. And then I liked Tintin. And all sorts of just standard things. But nothing exciting. And I was kind of drawing them myself. And then when I was 13, I sent a comic to this kind of classy German kids magazine that Axel Scheffler was working for them. And some other people, they were German names, so I was like, oh, it's all heroes. And I got this letter back saying, oh, we really like your comic. Would you like to work for us regularly? Here's a check for the first one. Maybe you're still in school, but we don't mind. And I was like, I'm 13! Thank you! And then I had this, like, really nice gig and did that for a while until one day they told me, because I kind of then got a bit older and was doing these stories about, like, gay stalks and all things. And I said, actually, we done dead babies. And they were like, actually, we don't think you have a sense of humour.
Comics don't have to be funny.
No, that was, for them they had to. It's like, well, the thing you have to understand is that children really like humour and you really, I don't know, maybe it's an English sense of humour or something. So I thought, oh God, so I went to England. and then studied illustration. And then got into making picture books. And then the first picture book I was illustrating myself, I kind of had problems with, I just could not get the layout quite right. It was Shark and Lobster, and the story was quite long, and only 12 spreads. And I was trying to use all the rules that I learned about, you know, varying the layouts in clever ways. And it just wasn't working. And then one day the art director said, I have an idea. Let's make it a bubbly book. And I was like, a what? And she's like, a bubbly book. And showed me some comics. And I was like, a comic? Ah!
I'm going to start calling it that.
It was really nice. And she kind of gave me, and she showed me David Boring, of all things. I was like, that's in this. And she said,
kids love that.
She sent me up into the, she sent me up into the attic with a copy of David Boring and Ghost World. And said, have a look at these and see if you can make any sense of it. I was like, I've read them already. And she was kind of saying, maybe you can make a comic. And I was kind of like, oh, I think I can. I've made comics before. And I kind of, and they locked me up in the attic for the rest of the day and said, you know, you can come down when you've worked this out. And then I was like on the floor with some biscuits in the attic, and I was drawing all these comic panels. And suddenly it was like, oh, I get it. I know how to do art. I can paste this. And I was like, box here, box there. And a few hours later, I came down and kind of, I said, I finished all my biscuits and this. Can you have a look? And they were like, oh, brilliant. And it just stayed exactly like that. It was like the layout we used, more or less. And after that, then that went so well that they basically said, oh, this is what you do now. So you make comics for us now. I was like, hooray! And you should have said, like, years ago. Ah, worked on this for years, and it didn't work. I made so many different versions of it as a classic picture book, and I was always thinking, I wish this could be a comic. That's ridiculous.
And, I mean, as I was kind of, like, you know, hinting at earlier, because the three of you share ideas and are inspired by each other, there was a group of people I interviewed a few weeks ago and was broadcast on last week's show, a group of Irish professional comic book artists who call themselves Eclectic Mix because they run a blog under that name, and they've actually published a sketchbook of work from the blog. Speaking for Gary in absentia, could the three of you, do you think, see a sketchbook coming out of the Fleece Station that actually shows the three of you, if not working together, but responding to each other's art?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can totally, we could totally put something out, if, you know, just slap it down in the photocopier and we can make things.
You'd have to make me lots of cups of tea to make me actually do drawings on for my own books. I'd be like, oh, am I getting paid for this?
Yeah, but you did a morning sketch today.
Drawing for
you loved
free.
It.
Yeah, but that was for a book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose you could, like, train me up to do extra work. I'd be like, stop knitting. Do some sketching for the sketchbook. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, we'd have to have, like, my sketches and Gary's stories and Vivian's knitting stuck in the middle of it.
No, that'd be wrong. No, you just have to get really excited about it and leave gaps and then maybe leave them lying around with a biscuit next to it.
We could put stains of your homemade tomato chutney on it.
Oh,
it's like getting into Dave McKean territory.
Yes. Oh, God, yes.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. For more info about all of the artists in today's show, please visit our blog at www.panelborders.wordpress.com. As it's nearly November, there are a variety of small press events in London coming up shortly, such as Handmade and Bound, the Affordable Book Arts and Zine Fair on Sunday the 1st of November at the St. Aloysius Social Club near Euston, the Small Press Comiquette on Sunday the 8th of November, which is part of the fortnight-long Comica Festival at the ICA on the Mall in central London, and Are You Zine Friendly on Thursday the 12th of November, which is an alternate press event at the Foundry in Hoxton, which is promoting a new Small Press web resource, the Zine Friendly blog. And that's at 86 Great Eastern Street. For more info about all of these events, please check out the legendary Jimmy Gherkin's blog at comicsandzines.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening.